This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.
This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. It's Monday, the 19th of May. On Wednesday, President Cyril Ramaphosa will sit down with US President Donald Trump, while many here in South Africa are hoping that this won't turn into a Zelensky-type affair. Ramaphosa himself is calm and collected, saying this is just business as usual.
No, I'm not worried about anything. We're going there to discuss trade and our bilateral relations, and that's what we are going to discuss. It's country to country, and we trade with each other, so we have to relate to each other, and that's just what it is. And so just as he meets other people, and I also meet other people, it's state to state, we are representing our peoples.
Meanwhile, back at home, it's certainly not business as usual. Tensions are escalating, and people are feeling compelled to speak out, with opinions dramatically divided on the Afrikaner refugees that arrived in the US last week. Gerard Papenfuss, the CEO of the National Employers Association of South Africa, took to NISA's YouTube platform to send this message to Cyril. That's in response to Ramaphosa referring to the Afrikaner refugees as cowards.
Mr. President, your government has introduced several pieces of race-based laws. Employment equity, for instance, is aimed at severely limiting the employment of minorities in the workplace, not only in government service, but also in the private sector. In addition, another race-based piece of legislation, broad-based black economic empowerment, also introduced by your government, ensures that if your government succeeds in forcing white men out of employment, compelling them to start their own businesses, they might eventually have to sacrifice ownership of these businesses in order to comply with your laws. BEE demands from these entrepreneurs, in order to participate in the mainstream economy, cede the majority share of their businesses to a person with a government-approved skin color. That, Mr. President, certainly amounts to economic persecution and even borders on economic extermination. The introduction of these measures to correct the wrongs of the past will not have the result that you anticipate. In fact, it will result in exactly the opposite. It will cause South Africa's economic decline to not only continue, but to accelerate rapidly.
Now, Julius Malema has an entirely different opinion. Firstly, he thinks that Cyril shouldn't be going to meet Trump, and he also took aim at the Afrikaner refugees.
You cannot leave your country in a crisis and go to America where you're going to be ill-treated. He's going to be ill-treated. He will not be given the necessary respect. And that's what Americans do. Madiba tried to convince them that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And then President Mbeki did the same, tried to convince them that there are no weapons of mass destruction. They still went on to destroy Iraq, even when there was no evidence. Till to date, they've not produced a single evidence that there was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. So it's a waste of time. He's going to, if he wants them to start treating him differently, and he's going to beg them to attend the G20, he's going to have to compromise some of the fundamental policies of this country, which were not prepared. If he does that, he must not come back. He must stay there with those 49 Afrikaners already. He must also stay there because he can't compromise our sovereignty for political expediency. We've got positions on Palestine. We've got position on the embassy of Israel. We have a resolution of parliament that said that embassy must leave South Africa. Its majority in parliament took that decision. So you cannot go alone as an executive, overrule the position of parliament. If he does that, it will be illegal and we're going to fight it. There are no Afrikaners who have been killed here in South Africa. It's not true. And there are no 49 Afrikaners who left South Africa. You all know that. It's a fiction. It's drama. You know, America with drama is number one. That thing is Muvhango. I don't know what is Muvhango in Africa. It's just a drama. I believe they landed and then they waited for cameras, took them pictures. The next flight back to South Africa. If those people are farmers, it means there are 49 farms available. Why are we not expropriating them? Because they've abandoned them. But why is the media not telling us? Because they say these are farmers. Why is the media, through its own investigation, say to us, this one, this picture you see is a farmer at this. They are not farmers. There's no one who left farming here in South Africa. I suspect that those whites were these ones who were looking after cars at the parking lot. They were attending to cars and they went to fetch them there. They can't live. They will never live the kind of life they live here in South Africa, anywhere else. Even if you live here as a millionaire and you go to USA, your money gets reduced to nothing.
Every Sunday, Neil De Beer sits down with BizNews' Chris Steyn. And while on the theme of cowards, Neil just couldn't hold back on his opinion this week.
Cyril Ramaphosa is going next week to face the very man that's calling him a coward. So we'll talk about that after the NAMPO fiasco debacle's absolute dissection of where both Paul and Cyril tried to go catch a little bit of shine. But to call people of your own country cowards, saying that they didn't want to stay here because they didn't stomach what we are. I will remind Mr. Ramaphosa that many of members of the ANC, while fighting and feeling oppressed in this country, also left this country. Now, I am with any doubt. I am not drawing a similarity between apartheid and the current problems we're having in this country. Please, I won't do that. You know I won't. I come from there. You can't draw the similarity. But before Cyril Ramaphosa gets up and says that people are cowards, without understanding each one of those families' plights and where they come from and what happened to them, he should remember that people that in the ANC that felt oppressed also left. Would he call them cowards? No, he won't call them cowards. This is the cowardice of this man. I'll tell you what's a coward. A coward is a man that when it came for us to realize that we had a COVID problem, hid and laid behind his own walls and his own stones. This is the coward that when it had to come time to face up that people stole money in this country and looting was taking place, this is the coward that hit them. This is the coward that had to acknowledge in a leaked cell phone between ANC and NEC members that without a doubt, public money was used to boost the ANC's election. This is the coward that when it came to the time to admit that state capture happened under his watch while he was the deputy president with Jacob Zuma. This is the coward that said nothing. This is the coward that when it came that they found money in his mattress at Pala Pala, started using state enterprise to protect his service. This is the coward that when it had to be taken to parliament to investigate, used the ANC to throttle such investigation. This is the coward that is refusing to get up and acknowledge, I don't care for the word genocide, but that farmers are being brutally slaughtered and murdered in this country. This is the coward that is refusing to acknowledge that we made mistakes by backing Iran. This is the coward. This is the coward. So if I had to really start writing stuff down about cowardice in this country from a man who calls other people cowards, then Cyril Ramaphosa, like you had to admit that the Zondo Commission, that the ANC is accused number one, well, Mr. Ramaphosa, you are coward number one. And until you don't fix that, you'll remain so. Cease. Ha!
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Colonel Chris Wyatt, who is a regular guest on BizNews and who has his own YouTube platform, has been following the story of Thea van Staden, one of the Afrikaner refugees who left her small holding in South Africa for the US. That's following four violent attacks over the last 2 years. Let's dip into that conversation.
There she is, Thea van Staden. Oh, she's in the Caribbean. Are you filming an episode of Lost in of a Death in Paradise with the Brits?
My tent is right underneath that tree right there. It used to be on your front lawn, but we vacated when the jungle drums told us you were coming home.
So the first part was cut off. You said your tent was under that tree. Is that what you said?
That's it. My tent is underneath that tree right there.
Well, okay. So let's dispel the first rumor. Yes, we both have green screens behind us, but you don't live in a FEMA tent.
No, I don't. I don't. I live in a small apartment. It's like an open plan, a bedroom, a seating area, kitchen area, and a bathroom. It's plenty of room. It's very comfortable. It's all that we need right now.
All right, so it's meeting your basic needs. Did you roll into a 2-star hotel when you first arrived, or was the apartment waiting for you?
No, it was waiting. So because we arrived when we did, it was such a long day. They decided to put us in the temporary housing and just to give us some time to rest before they started bombarding us with information. Because as they said, you know, you cannot absorb any information if you're so tired. So we're in the temporary temporary housing, and there's actually a very good reason for them doing that.
Well, let me cover a couple things very quickly. I understand that you've been neglected and disrespected and ignored by the refugee resettlement officials. They simply, you know, stuck you in a FEMA tent and have never been in contact with you since because that's just how it is. We treat our refugees like that. Can you confirm any of that's true?
No, actually, it's been overwhelmingly warm. We feel like we're getting treated with more dignity and respect than we have ever. We're just not used to it. I mean, they're around all the time, checking on us, making sure that we have enough food to eat, asking us if we need anything. They drive us around. We went to visit their offices a couple of days ago so we could see where they're at, so that if we need anything or any help, we know where to find them. We've got all the contact details. We've got more than enough food. I mean, if you're smart, you can stretch it out over a month for one person, or for everybody, actually. And we're not the exception to the rule. I've spoken to some guys over here that's refugees that came in 4 years ago, and some of them 15 years ago, and they got the exact same treatment.
So some of those refugees you spoke to, what are some of the countries they come from? Did they mention it?
Yes. So there's some from the Middle East. There's some from Africa.
Okay. So you said some of these refugees came 4 years ago. Okay, that would be back when Trump was president, or just around the time Trump left. So Trump must have let these people in the country then, these black people and these Africans and Middle Easterners. But Thea, I thought that the only reason America is because Trump's a racist, and that's why. Am I missing something here? I'm confused.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's so much trash talk out there. I followed your advice and I've kind of put my blinkers on and cut it all out. But I've been curious and I wanted to know. So I had long conversations with these folks and, you know, everybody gets treated with dignity. It doesn't matter which country you're coming from. And yes, I can confirm that these guys are not white.
On the international front, Prosus's CEO is looking to using M&A to become the biggest tech lifestyle company outside of the US and Asia. Caroline Hyde and Ed Ludlow have all the details.
I'm more excited about how fast we are moving in AI. We announced our large commerce model that is a very big AI model that consolidates all transactional information in all processes to train a model to serve better our customers. So we are innovating a lot using OpenAI O4 and DeepSeek and all kind of new models to really make a step forward in how AI advance on e-commerce. So data is a big priority for us. We are investing a lot on that. And we are just starting to release the good results of that.
And what you call yourself is sort of lifestyle e-commerce. What else do you bolt on? Look, we've got the food delivery, you've got the mobility side, you've got the travel with this new travel operator that you've been buying.
Events,
what else comes to that?
Payment. And I think it's good enough for now. So let me deliver lots of results on that. And now we'll put some adjacents before. But as you can see, food delivery is very important because food delivery is a very high frequency business. People buy sometimes 5, 10, 20 times per week. So on top of food delivery, we are putting many other adjacencies as payments, as travel, as events. But why I'm very excited now, Prosus now is much more focused in three ecosystems. The first ecosystem of our focus is Latin America.
Yeah.
So you have all these business, all these offers working together in Latin America. Our second focus is India. And we have also Swiggy, that is a food delivery business in India. On top of that, payments, PayU, and Meesho, and Urban Company, other companies in India. So we are doing the same ecosystem approach in India. And our third, and I'm very excited about that, focus is Europe. I think Europe needs big tech in Europe. Now, we just bought Just Eat Takeaway. As I told you last time, we have $18 billion to invest. We want to invest a lot in Europe. And on top of Just Eat Takeaway, as soon as our deal is approved, so we are waiting for Europe to approve that, we are going to be able to invest 10 times more in AI in Europe. That's my big goal.
So, Fabrizio, you took us around the world there on a jet plane, but with the Just Eat deal, there's a shareholder complaint, right? They basically think €20.30 is less than half what you should be paying. What's the latest on that? Do you see it changing?
We are very confident this is a very good offer for both sides. We are paying around 50%, it's a little more, 55 or 60% premium in the previous price. So we are very confident this is a great offer. We got very good reception for most of the shareholders. Our expectation is to close. We have a strong expectation to close at the offer, and we think it's an amazing offer to the shareholders.
What are the regions next? Which country are you going to surprise us with your next deal? We just have 10 seconds.
Latin America, India, and Europe, the biggest tech company outside US and China. Let me surprise you getting to $200 billion very fast and come here to talk about our next steps.
Staying with international news, some analysts are proposing the best way to unlock value from Alphabet is a breakup of the company into smaller parts, which would then allow investors the opportunity to own parts that they really want. Let's go back to our Bloomberg colleagues on what a potential breakup of the tech giant would in fact mean.
If Google was to break up into all its pieces, into each individual business, we think the stock could be worth $300 a share. We think that right now, everything is trading at a 15 times earnings multiple. That's a very low multiple for businesses like Waymo, Cloud, YouTube, and potentially the TPU business. Those businesses would be trading at 50 times our earnings or more if they were independent, and Google is really holding them back by keeping them with search, which is now a tainted business, a controversial business that investors are really not willing to put a lot of value on.
Well, it's interesting to read this call in and of itself, but also when you put it against the regulatory backdrop right now, because you do have regulators attempting to break up this company, and you're saying, actually, this would be a good idea. Is this something that you see as actually likely to happen?
This is a catalyst. It's a potential catalyst. The Department of Justice telling Google, break up your monopoly, is a potential catalyst, and the company should be leaning into that. Instead of dragging this out and dragging it out in court and having it influence all its decisions, instead Google could just say, okay, we'll spin off the ad network. That would be great. Because then that business would trade like the Trade Desk, which again is much higher. And then they could spin off YouTube. Then that would trade like Netflix, which is much higher. Unfortunately, that's not what the management team is doing right now. Right now, they're just dragging their feet. They're going to fight it in court. They're going to try to keep the company intact, which, again, is not in the best interest of shareholders.
So why? I mean, Sundar Pichai, Ruth Porat, Ken Walker, these are smart people. Are they disincentivized to make a move like that as executives?
They are too focused on profits, on short-term profits. They know that if they spun off all these businesses into individual pieces, they lose some of the synergy of having them in one place. So let's say that instead of earning $11 a share this year, if all the individual pieces were broken up, they'd maybe only own $10 a share. But again, we argue that you're getting paid 15 times the $11. If you were able to get paid 50 times on some pieces of the $10, shareholders would own a much bigger business. So management team is focused on profits in the short term instead of focusing on shareholder value, which is their job.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more context on both the local and global front. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees.